Welcome to the Obojima Podcast, episode something. My name is Jeremiah. This is Ari and Adam, and they are our amazing writer. Oh, what does that mean?
Six.
Oh, it's episode six. I'm getting hand signs off the side. It's episode six. This is episode six. Welcome back to the Obojima Podcast. Ari, Adam, Jeremiah, we are the writers for Obojima, and you're about to step in to our writers meeting. We have a weekly writers meeting every week, and this is it.
This is what we
now
do.
It's on camera. In our past episodes, we talked about the spirits. This one, we're talking about the culture of Obojima. This is a broad topic that I'm sure is going to incite many, 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 many tangents.
Yes.
So let's just jump into it. Human history.
So
give me the beginning.
Give me the history of all humans on Obojima.
3.5 million years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Detail it. Right now, I'm going to give the breakdown of what we know about history, which is the island existed. The island existed with technology. The spirit realm existed. And at some point in time, Nakudamas made it to Obojima, potentially in a mythological way. We're not sure exactly. There's legends that point in the direction. And then at some point in time, humans also made it to Obojima. And during that time, the queen Nakudama decided to demolish is an aggressive word. Disconnect her people. Rather than having two opposing sides, she decided to tell her people to go and commingle and exist within Obojima culture or human culture, and together it made this melting pot. I don't know if spirits are in the picture at that point in time, if they are, if they aren't.
I always imagine them part of it. I imagine that's probably one of the first elements that the earliest Nakudama encountered was, was dealing with spirits. And I like that the arrival of humans kind of mixed it up a little bit, and not necessarily in an adversarial way. I think that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think having a Nakudama myth about the arrival of the humans.
Yeah.
Like maybe the Nakudama even think that they brought them into existence, or to that the Nakudama see them from coming from another dimension or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the human perspective is probably, a seafaring people that made their way to the island. And the way we've kind of talked about the way the islanders think of history is by ages, based on arrivals of different peoples. So you'd have earliest prehistory before Nakudama, and then the first recorded age of the island is the Nakudama age, and then the arrival of the humans creates a new age. And then you have the weird thing with the humans, because with the humans also come elves.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And that pseudo arrival.
Mm-hmm. Pseudo arrival, yeah. So elves are kind of attached to humanity in that human families, human parents can just have one of their children could be an elf. It's kind of random, and just that's what happens. So the age of humanity also includes elves.
Yeah.
And then after that, the latest arrivals are the Dara.
Yeah.
And so I think in current timeline,
we're in the age of Dara.
Age of Dara.
Interesting. I love that. I actually really love that.
Yeah, it's neat.
I think this kind of expands into other topics in this culture section, but I don't know that Obojima is big enough that there's all of these recorded documents everywhere.
Mm.
I'm imagining Obojima being pretty small, not a lot of, it's there. Yeah. And then that's a foot and a half?
Yeah.
It's a little bigger than my head.
Yeah. I'm imagining Obojima being fairly small, which means that as far as a culture and people, how important is it? I think one of the reasons that there's a lot of mystery as to what's going on and history is a little muddied is because when you're a big collection of farmers and you know, crafters and explorers and things like that, it's less about recording like a lot of the history and understanding and more about existing. And now I think in the age of Dara, we're starting to get people who are like, we've come to harmony. Now let's start to figure out what's been going on, which is where groups like AHA really emerge, where they're like, why is like up until this point, this is the world. But now they're like, why does technology exist? What let's see the first, you know, Nakudama
this
temples
age
and
of inquiry.
Yeah.
And even like the 80s tech, you know, that has been there as even during the times of the Nakadama, like, and maybe even before then, you know, like, what is that? And, you know, there's a good question there, you know, like, and it's incorporated into the culture, like the humans have lived in that and just, it's always been that way.
Yeah.
Right. Humans have built their villages in this thing and also that it's strangely, some parts of it decay and other parts magically don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they incorporate it in their magic, you know, in some places.
Yeah. And spirits have learned to connect with it in special ways, unique ways to only to them. So,
I mean, that's a cultural question. You know, one of the things in doing some of this writing is the need for an in-world name for this technology has emerged. We call it 1980s tech, but obviously in-world, there's no concept of 1980s.
Yeah.
Unless that was somehow apparent in the technology and they refer to it, you know, like made in whatever. You know,
yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh, it's a recurring thing. So one thing would be interesting to kind of, I don't know if this is the place to do it, but we need a name for what the people of Obijima call this stuff.
Yeah.
Now, do they have a collective name for all of it? Do they see it as, a collection of like technology, or do they refer to individual things simply as what they are?
How Star Trek, how sneaky was that? Did you notice our secret handshake or our secret?
I was getting reprimanded for being too far away.
Yeah. Well, there's also a gun underneath the table.
Drift too far back.
There's a Roomba with a knife attached to it.
Pressed against my leg. Right?
Yeah.
No, I think probably a unifying word when an object or a location is disconnected from Obijima. Well, that's the other thing. I don't even know that they would consider it disconnected.
Right. It
just maybe from an age or like from the age of maybe even from the age of magic or the like a or
the
like
age a, of stuff.
The age of, the age of random shit.
Yeah.
Imagine it's like, you know, you're like living in Cairo, you were born in Cairo and you look across the Nile and you see the pyramids and this is from another, you know, almost lifetimes and lifetimes ago. It's like, but yet it's a part of your life, you know? And even probably, I imagine a lot of people are like, yeah, those are our ancient ancestors. Maybe, mm-hmm. So maybe Obijima's look at it is like, our ancestors built this. We don't know really who, because nobody can say like, the Nakadama can't claim that it's their ancestors that made this. The humans can't claim it. The elves mm-hmm. can't. Nobody can claim it.
Anyone can claim it.
But yeah, I guess. Yeah,
yeah, that's true.
But you know, it's like they're figuring it out, and they also. I mean, maybe culturally, everybody on Obijima says it's part of the spirit realm. That these came from the spirit realm because spirits activate these things.
Mm.
And without it, because there isn't electricity. Like we'd had that chat about like. Is there electricity on Obijima? Are there like electrical cables? Like,
right.
And we're like, nope, that's not the deal. Like really this whole thing, Obijimas have discovered that really it's spirit power that makes these vending machines do their thing.
Yeah.
So,
the question I have for it then is, do Obijimans see it as a thing that was created by another being? Or do they see it as a thing that the island created?
It feels like if I was to look at a tree that the island, you know, like a special kind of fruit tree or a special kind of plant comes out of the island, that feels natural to me. There's something unnatural about right. a vending machine. But if somebody said to me, like, I would think like that conceivably could come from the spirit realm, especially if I haven't been to the spirit realm.
Oh, well, right.
I was going to say, are just all things weird kind of, do they chalk it up to like spirit shenanigans? Right. I don't know.
I think it has to be up the first people. Cause I'm realizing if they are able to access things like VHS and music mm-hmm. and stuff like that, and even potentially be able to turn them to function. Like if I have a TV that I insert a VHS into, like, oh, this is the right size, and I click it in and a spirit turns it on and I play the first 30 minutes of RoboCop, yeah. they're going to go, oh, this is a different group of people.
Yeah.
I really hope that's the cultural touchstone.
Is RoboCop. So maybe it's like...
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Oh, and maybe this connects to their beliefs of the beyond. So maybe this is like the people from beyond.
You go to the great yeah. static in the sky.
The great static. The
yeah. Great, yeah.
The one where it's policed yeah. by half machine, half man.
Now yeah. I want Obojiman culture to just be based on RoboCop. But it was yeah. so influential. This becomes like a Bible.
Uh-huh. Yeah, RoboCop and Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah, that's the only VHS tapes. That's it. And of course, it's like got the FBI warning. Yeah. Like, yeah, yeah oh. you cannot duplicate this world because these things called the FBI will come.
Like, they'll get you.
FBI. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God. Organizations.
Yeah.
Like they create the FBI.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you know, that's another thing is like we chatted, like, is English common speech?
Would you steal a car?
A K truck.
Would you steal a K truck? You wouldn't steal a film, would you?
No.
What's a
or
film?
Would you? Yeah, that's a quick way to become a demon in this world. You'll steal the VHS. Yeah.
You're on a oh my, that's so funny.
Don't rewind.
Parents reprimanding their children. You're on a fast track to becoming a demon. You don't want to become a demon. That's a demon behavior.
That's right. You hoard those VHS tapes. Yeah. They'll come for you.
RoboCop will come for you. Sorry oh, for man. Laughing too loud. That's
I mean, I think that is interesting. These little artifacts from what is presumably an earlier age, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we don't know what brought that technology. You know, where we don't know, as an Obojiman, what the source of this thing is. So the assumption is that it is from an older time.
Yeah.
And like that is interesting. And what media exists, you know, we get to curate that. That's a fun thing.
Yeah. I was thinking about this, and I love anyone can do this. I highly recommend it, and I'd love to hear what playlists you make.
Oh yeah.
This is very interesting. I was thinking if people are finding cassettes with, like, you know, like mixtapes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
That they find in world. And that's the track. That's the music that you're playing while in adventure.
Oh. That's great.
And then
that's cool.
And then like, if you find another one, then the DM's like, okay, you first had these 10 songs. Now you have another track, and here are the other 10 songs that you can listen to. And so it's like, before you start combat, you turn to them and go, which track are you putting on? And like the wizard's like, I put in mixtape C, and you yeah. put it in, and it's like mm-hmm. these 8 songs.
Eye of the Tiger, plays. Right?
Yeah, so interesting. And it's 4 really, really like energetic like rock songs, followed by like 2 ABBA songs, followed by
another. The Cure. Yeah.
we talked about the idea of, you know, spell books, you know, or you know, cassettes being essentially like spell books.
Yeah.
And that idea of having mixtapes, and you got to like fast forward to the track to in order to cast your thing, and it gives this whole like, you know, auditory component to casting, which yeah. you know,
it's super cool.
Yeah.
So okay, I think if it were me, I would probably stamp forward saying that technology and buildings and things that existed from 80s is the world, like the first age, like just like. Like everything else is the age of the thing that occurred, like the age of Nakadama, the age of spirits. Mm-hmm. Then it was the age of Nakudama. Then mm-hmm. it was the age of man. Then it was the age of elf. Then it was the age of Dara. Or now it's the age of Dara. And prior to that, before all of it, was the first age. And that's when those people existed.
So do we, I mean, is the collective term then like first age tech? Is tech with even the word they would use? Is it like first age artifact, first age, you know what I mean? Like what, how would they call that?
I think it's probably just like, oh, it's an item from the first age, or that's mm-hmm. That was built in the first age, or that's a building in the first age.
It just, there's an interesting dynamic of the people who tinker with this stuff in Obijima, who you would think of as like your most advanced technology people, are essentially, you know, like archaeologists, right? Yeah. Like, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think, like, you know, if I was running Obijima, I feel like I would want, like, English or, you know, whatever this 80s tech has, I think I'd want it to be different than common in Obijima. Like, I think the Obijima language, I would want to be different. Now, everybody can run it their own way if they want to, like, oh, you can understand, you know, what's being said when you put on the VHS tape and you boot it up, you can read it and you like realize all that stuff. That's fine.
Maybe you don't. Yeah, I like that too.
But I'd like it to be like you're just watching this thing and it's spoken in this weird, unintelligible language that nobody can decipher. I mean,
there's a Rosetta Stone when you have one with subtitles.
Yeah.
And now you have these essentially, you know, characters and glyphs that you have to now figure out.
Does that mean
I like that?
We're the first D&D book that allows English to be a language you can learn.
I mean, but the question is, right? Like, is 1980s tech?
Is it English?
We're not even asserting if that 80s style tech is literally from.
It's true.
Earth 80s.
Earth 80s, right? Like,
could be alternate
it. And so, is it English? Is it? It could be even another language from Earth. Is it any? You know, just a language that is not native to this place, mm-hmm. Or is native to this place and has been, you know, lost. Because in my mind, this might just be my headcanon at this point, is the common of this place presumably is the Nakudama language.
Interesting. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
If they're the first, that's right? I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be, but I like, there's something interesting about maybe the common speech is a mix between Nakudama and the original human language that came here. And this that is common. Right?
Yeah.
There might be some if you know common, you could probably pass, you know, maybe get through, you know, muddle your way through Nakudama language. You might, you know, pick up about 50% of it or something like that. It would be kind of interesting. Because we talked about the idea of the towns or the settlements here being cosmopolitan in that they're, you know, there's not like Nakudama enclaves and human enclaves. They cohabitate, right? Yeah. Or they exist together in the same settlements. And so this idea of them sharing that language, whether the game object would be common, right? The in-game, you know, language, you know, it would be, this is the common language of Obijima. Mm-hmm. But I love the idea of them, you know, playing an old arcade game or watching a movie and it's like, this language means nothing to me and I'm just kind of figuring it out, you know? And then you have certain sages that have deciphered probably like with 80% accuracy the language, but losing some of the kind of the idioms and, you know, not quite getting all that stuff.
I mean, you know, Obijimans have been exposed to things that are different and strange, like like a vending machine. Like, you know, their technology is basically wagons. They're sort of in medieval, like if this was stripped out, they would kind of be in sort of a medieval era of technology, but they're living amongst this advanced technology and that they're used to. So, but when they would, if they were to watch a VHS tape of RoboCop, that would be such a, and probably not many Obijimans have watched that. But if an Obijima was to watch something like that, they would, first of all, be blown away by what are these strange beings like. But then they would see things of like, oh, that thing was moving at an extremely fast rate of speed, that vehicle that they would then see in their life. And they would say, oh, that a person was in that and drove that thing, you know, like they might start to piece together, like maybe there was a movie where there was a vending machine, like I don't know, if like Back to the Future, Marty McFly like kicks the vending machine and gets the Coke can, and they might go, oh, and then so OB-GYNs might go up to vending machines and kick them, you know, and like hoping that something would fall out, or like, I don't know. It's like crazy stories like that just start to go through my head.
Yeah, like incomplete, you know, manuals based on these movies. Yeah.
Because they're missing the electricity part of it. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, but Back to the Future, they would see like 1.21 gigawatts, Marty, you know, and it's like, they're like, whoa, you can harness the lightning? Like, they might get ideas that might lead to like either spell discoveries, mm-hmm, or harnessing powers. Who knows?
And all of this probably happened fairly early on for them to like get to where they are now, where they're, you know, there's flying machines and giant submersibles.
That's right. Yeah.
You know,
with magic, the idea of spirits being able to power these things, or even, you know, you talked about a spell, mm-hmm, that can essentially act in that way of like, you know, turning something on.
Yeah.
That had to be like, they're not just going to know, I need this spell that could turn on electrical equipment, unless they know what that is. But because that technology is ancient, that spell to do that has probably been around for a very long time. And so even that's, I'm fascinated by the idea of 80s tech being both high tech and ancient. Like, I just think that's, and also just like visually, it's interesting.
Well, yeah. I mean, you think of like the Coastal Divers Lodge with the pontuée, the submersible, which is, you know, kind of, I imagine that the head of that, the diver and his two daughters, like that's based on Jacques Cousteau. And Jacques Cousteau, like, you know, I think he came out with a documentary called The Silent World, like, and it was about sort of the underwater realm back when scuba diving was really early on. And like, that could be a VHS tape that they discovered. And these people, these OB-GYNs, saw that and were inspired by it, mm-hmm, you know? And because that is a very rare experience, like maybe only a few wizards and witches on the island have actually learned about this whole VHS tape. And maybe they do see it as like, this is a, basically like if you took an ancient tome, an ancient book, that's what kind of it is. It's this visual book. You put it in this thing and you do this magical spell and the spirit inhabited it. And all of a sudden this visual information comes up and you're looking into another dimension and you're seeing this person talk to you about the world of underwater is very beautiful. And we must, you know, like, it's like, whoa, holy smokes. Like there's this powerful message coming through. And so, you know, this, you know, Coastal Divers Lodge maybe has been founded on that. You know, maybe that is the reason why it exists, is because of Jacques Cousteau. So it's like this weird, like, you know, cause and effect. Yeah. Who knows?
The idea of being able to just play an old Jacques Cousteau video at your table to be immersive in this way is really cool. Whoa. Like that's something that you get with OB-GYNs, right?
Yeah.
You have access to all this stuff. You know, it's the songs, it's all of that. And I think it's an enriching experience to do that.
That's cool. It makes me think of like, you know, OB-GYN culture at your table. If you have like a favorite like 80s thing, whether it's a documentary, whether it's a music video, you could do a whole adventure around that, like a metaphorized adventure, or there could be a villain based on a music video that you saw, like, I don't know, like Michael Jackson Thriller. Like there could be like a villain who's just like, this person conjured the dead and then controlled them through dancing. And then it's like, that's your villain, you know? It's like, that's so bizarre. And you play it at the table and people who are playing it, and then they're like, wait a minute, this is Thriller. Like, what the heck? This is crazy. You know, like that could be fun, or like a documentary. Like, there's so many great 80s documentaries.
And that's the fun part where you get the, you know, you get the player who has their knowledge that they're bringing to the table, and then there's their character's knowledge. Mm. And when a player knows more than their own character, it's something that they get to embrace, right? They get to know what it means to not really understand this kind of stuff, or, you know, and it's an interesting dynamic between a player and their own character based on knowledge. Because usually what happens is in D&D, your character knows stuff that you wouldn't know, right? If I'm a wizard, my wizard knows how to cast spells. I don't know how to cast spells or whatever. But in this case, you know a little bit more than your character, or a lot more than your character. And I think Yeah. That could also lead to some fun, just fun ways to play with your character.
Okay. So we've talked a lot about technology here. What do Obajimans think on, in this kind of pseudo connects, magic and spirits? Because technology is being operated through magic. Without technology, it's just, it's dormant, or it's being activated through spirits, which are inherently this magical being. So what are Obajimans' thought on magic? It has to be based off of the island and everything being so magic, just springing into life and creating things and imbuing things with these arcane properties. How do Obajimans view magic?
I'm thinking because spirits existed before, you know, Nakodama showed up, and this technology existed before Nakodama showed up. My assumption, or my first kind of take on it, is that it's something that is just part of their lives, and mm-hmm. not everybody is necessarily adept at wielding it, but it is. There's probably like local kind of folk customs of magic where it's commonplace enough where it's not so weird. There are, you know, witches about and stuff like that, mm-hmm. and potions and things that are kind of baked into the experience of the world.
So when I was making a lot of the spells and certain aspects like that, I was thinking of how did Obajimans come up with this to do tasks in their daily life. For example, the spell water bullet. Like you conjure either from your mouth, you fill your mouth with water and spit out a bullet, or you like hold your hand out and it conjures like a blast. And in D&D or in the spell, it's just a way to deal damage. Hmm. But how did Obajimans come to that conclusion? Like, yes, it is used to deal damage, but what did they use it for? Like it was a way to, you know, like let's say they harness, like they collect pearls, but they don't want to kill the clams. Mm. So they utilize a mini version of this to like stun them, and they like collect the pearl and release the clam. Mm. Or like, how are they utilizing these certain things? The same with, there's a spell that, generates like a sandcastle around you, and it's like protective, but it also could be like a place for you to stay, and it's temporary, but that was founded in a village where they craft and create buildings out of sand constantly. And so the spell was generated from like a usefulness to the Obajiman people that is now being used separately by adventurers for different reasons.
Mm. And when I hear a spell like, you know, water bullet, I imagine it serving a similar function to the way shepherds would use slings, right? Mm-hmm. To keep predators away from their flock. So you can imagine, you know, slings have sling bullets, and you have your water bullet, and you know, it's a way to protect the flock and not necessarily killing, you know, the predator, but just driving them off kind of thing.
Yeah.
Kind of
cool.
Makes me think of like the archer fish, you know, that mm-hmm. little fish that's underwater and it spits and hits a bug. It's like they might have like looked at that and then, mm-hmm. and then, you know, taken their, that inspiration from nature and then been like, all right, well, I'm going to weave a spell around that.
Yeah. There's another spell called Plummet, which pulls a creature from the sky. And I was thinking about it on how Obajimans might use it. And what if like it was originally made to pull clouds from the sky so they could collect water on like a dry day.
Wow. That's cool.
That's really cool. So interesting. But the reason I bring all that up is not to talk about how cool these spells are, which they are very cool, and how they would use them. But the fact that we're focused, like I'm focusing on creating the line between how this spell was created and what it's currently being used for, means that Obajimans are focusing on crafting new magics because it's like clearly part of their day-to-day lives. Like I wouldn't be shocked if a farmer went and bought a couple potions from a witch because mm-hmm. they have like, today's the day that we collect all the radishes. And, you know, I'm going to get a potion of haste. I'm going to give it one to each of my farmer or one of, you know, my field hands. And we're going to get all the radishes in one day. Like I'm imagining that it's almost like secondhand for a lot of Obajimans. Mm-hmm. And maybe you don't have innate abilities to cast magic yourself, but you might have like a magic plow, or you might have a couple of potion bottles that you keep on hand that help you get through these types of things.
And, you know, kind of building on that, we also have, you know, obviously there are spells, there are, you know, different types of magic items and stuff, but one of the things that Obajima is offering is the potions, and we have the different rarities of potion. And so while you might have magic that a lot of OB-GYNs are familiar with or would not be weirded out if they experienced it. You do have this kind of higher tier, you know, the like rare potions that do things that they would even be astounded by or see as miraculous in some way, which I really think is cool.
It's actually funny you say that because I'm now tying this together in my head when I wasn't supposed to, or when I wasn't beforehand. My mechanics editor, Tony, amazing guy. Shout out to Tony. I know you're not watching this. Why would you? Really great guy. And he's also done a lot of third-party publishing and worked with a lot of talented people. He came to me and was like, hey, Jeremiah, just to let you know, not all, but a huge majority of your spells are first and second level and cantrips. And he was like, that's pretty abnormal for a book. You should probably expand this into higher levels. And at first I was like, why am I doing so many low-level spells? And it's because... I think it's because for that exact reason, OB-GYNs are not looking for one. Most OB-GYNs are not really powerful enough to cast high level spells, but the spells they're looking for are tiny. They need these little small things to help them accomplish tasks.
Yeah.
And they're not looking for the thing that teleports 30 people to the top of a mountain.
This will make me a god.
Yeah, they're not looking for things that, like, you know, like I cast a hail of fire. Like, that's not useful to them unless, like, what, they're burning controlled burns on their crops or something like that. Yeah. But even still, it's just like, so the that's stuff that they're generating are low level.
Yeah, that says something about OB-GYN culture as well. Yeah. It's like, this is not a culture of conquest. Yeah. It's not a culture of, you know, warfare and destruction. It's a culture of farming. You know, mainly, and enjoying life, and, you know,
it's not even, you know,
flying kites.
Even the way OB-GYN is organized, it's not a bunch of like political divisions, right? It's not a bunch of, you know, it's not like the island's divided into three, you know, warring
fiefdoms,
you know, factions, fiefdoms, right? And so that idea is really interesting. Yeah. Like, you know, spells that they would create that would be probably more damaging is either created by somebody with nefarious intent. Or, you know, to deal with monsters, right? I'm going to do this to fight a monster. So, you know, I will also just advocate for lower level spells just on a game level, because how many times have we made low level characters in our, you know, in our time, and we end up using the same spells? We fall into I fall into spell routine, and I love the idea of introducing new ways to use spells. And because of the way you're talking about spells is having a utilitarian origin first and then being used, you know, maybe for combat or whatever, it also it signals the players as well. Hey, you can get creative with how you're using these spells. And I know that obviously you could always do that in D&D, but this is baked into the culture of spellcasting of OB-GYN.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be an OB-GYN, that's how you would think about magic.
Right.
That's really cool. Yeah. Because it's like you might play a whole game of OB-GYN and never use like Eldritch Blast. Mm-hmm. You know, in fact, there's no use for it on this island. But if you, you know, like brew tea or something, you know, and like, or something like a spell like that's utilitarian like that, or like, you know, like an adventure here might be like, you've got to, harvest the farmer's radish field in like under a day, you know. It's like, what are you going to do? You know?
The tea variant of Eldritch Blast is Eldritch Splash. And it's where you just throw hot tea into someone's face and run.
Just disfigure someone. Yeah.
Take this. Yeah.
There's your dumb tea.
And all that being said, like, you know, if you wanted to go and use Eldritch Blast, that spell's there. And it is great. And it's perfectly usable. Mm-hmm. And
it's required if you're a warlock.
It sure is.
Yeah. I had a question. Like, one of the things, like, there are, you know, and this is part of the culture, but it's also a part of the spirits as well, that we have spirits that are sort of, you know, they're corporeal. Like, it's a spirit. Like, I could be a spirit sitting here with all of you, and, you know, you're humans and Nakadamas or whatever, and we're all kind of hanging out chatting. And, you know, I'm solid. But then there's other spirits that they go inside machines and they power vending machines. Mm-hmm. Now, are they different? Are they more like how do OB-GYNs think of spirits that way? Like, there's a certain, like, do spirits enjoy that? Do spirits like it's fun for them? The idea that I'm going to be used to do some kind of utility so that other people can get a benefit kind of feels a little weird. But if like there's sort of like there's a different kind of spirit that maybe they're, I don't know, they have a different, they're just different than me or as a spirit, like, are there different kinds of spirits? Like, I'm trying to figure out what that is.
I think the ability to possess, for lack of better words, a machine and imbue it with, you know, power, is probably unique to certain spirits. I think it's probably like a feature that they would have because not all spirits, especially spirits that if you cut back to our spirit chat, ones that are like fully materialized, that it like can't go back to the spirit realm. Like they've shed their, you know, ethereal body. I don't think they can, but I think certain spirits can. But I also think that what it could potentially do is create a unique job specific to spirits where it's like, oh yeah, I'll, like a spirit, like that's what they do. Like they're like, oh yeah, I'll get that thing working for you. What do you, you know, it'll be 6 Kojo root and a handful of petals and, you know, petals being the coin, not the, not just like leaves, you know, like a handful of gold and a couple roots or whatever. And I'll get that machine working for you. How long do you need to run? Oh, for an hour. All right, that'll be 12 gold. And that's like, just like, that's their job. That's the profession that they've chosen. They could have been a baker, but they have this innate ability. So that's what they're doing. And then, you know, maybe some of it is like, I'm not going to do it just for a stranger. Yeah. Like I'll do it. You're my friend. So of course, in the same way that like, if you were a woodcrafter and I was like, hey, my chair broke, and the leg needs to be glued back on. And you're like, well, I have all the tools and the clamps and the glue. Yeah, I'll do that for you. And then you take an hour of your time. But you're not going to go do it for some random stranger that walks up to you. I think it almost, I'm almost thinking of it as like a skill. Like certain spirits have this skill. And if they have the skill, you can either pay for it as like a thing that you're looking for. Or if you're a friend of them, they might do it for free. But I don't think it's something that all spirits have, nor is it an assumption that if I walked up to you and you were a spirit that you could do it.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like it's rare. Like, I feel like being able to activate, like, this technology is a rare thing. Like, most technologies dormant. Because I kind of feel like it's a fun adventure to... You know, you're walking in this village and, you know, you're talking with the people and then they say, yeah, like up on the hill, there's this kind of weird thing. And it's always been there for, you know, since anybody can remember. You go up there and it's a vending machine and inside there's something really cool.
Yeah.
And you're like, how do I get it? Now, I mean, can you smash these things open? Like, or are vending machines of a certain kind of, because some of this 80s technology is magically powered because we're saying it hasn't decayed over thousands of years. Like it hasn't rusted. So the cool thing is that you can smash it with your weapons, you can cast spells on it and nothing works.
So yeah, so there's, this is prior to both of you guys. So if you hadn't read this very specific vending machine document that I released, I totally get why you wouldn't know this information. But the way I describe it in it is, it's kind of like when someone makes a teleportation circle where you have to cast the spell teleportation circle every day on an object to kind of imbue it with this magic. And then it's just permanently there and you can access it. I was thinking the same way with a vending machine where like every day these mages will sit and they'll imbue it with, you know, the jolt cantrip and a few other things like a protection spell of some sort. And then at the very end of a year, it's like, this is a vending machine that operates on its own. It's fully powered. You can't break the glass. And then in that exact same vending, that vending machine, I also talk about them having companions, like companion spirits, like an awakened cat who might sit on top of the vending machine while they're off.
Yeah.
Like that. And they're kind of like the merchant that you deal with. So like the, oh, this is, you know, Goji's vending machine. Goji's off collecting ingredients. But I can help you, and it's like a cat sitting on top. What do you want? You know, we were out of that. I'm sorry, but you can get one of those things instead.
Oh, that's cool.
And so that's how I imagine it. There, you can get certain technology running constantly by spending time imbuing it with magic. And then if you don't have magic and there's a spirit, like you have a spirit companion who might have this ability, they might be able to operate it temporarily for you.
Yeah, that's cool.
So at least that's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
you don't have to stick with that.
Oh, I dig it.
That being said, what kind of spirits can do it? We have these companion spirits, and I think right off the bat, spectral spirits is a subcategory of companions. I think that is like the perfect thing for them specifically. Like they can possess and imbue a machine with temporary power for like a number of minutes or something like that. So go ahead.
I was going to say about like obejimans and magic that yes, magic is kind of, it's utilitarian. It's based on their culture, which is sort of farming and all that. It's not a feudal society. And they're used to it. They're used to it. It's not wild and crazy. And I think, again, it'd be interesting to talk about that, you know, that we're going to like sort of curate a spell list for what, you know, if you want to play in Obejima, you know, to really get the vibe of it, that these are going to be this, you're going to operate from this spell list. You know, of course you can play with any old spell you want.
And you'll probably have to, considering that I'm only generating first and second level spells.
Yeah. But, you know, it's like, who knows? Like, it might be that, you know, I could see me as a player playing Obejima, having a spellcaster, and then really just being like, you know, my wizard or sorcerer will learn my first and second level spells and my cantrips, and that's cool. And maybe that's enough for the story to really enjoy it, and that I really get into the potion crafting.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that gives it that extra bit of pizzazz, that in-world thing, you know.
You can also do something interesting where, you know, you have the spells that are presented in the book. And then there's a curated list. So here's all the stuff, the spells that show up in the player's handbook. But basically, like, hey, if you want, like, really to enjoy the Obejima flavor, this is a truncated list of spells, right? But then what you could do is, because people are always discovering spells, let's say, for example, and I don't know if this is true yet, let's say Fireball doesn't exist. Let's say it is not, what? Let's say it didn't make the curated list.
Okay, zoom in. What?
But.
Okay. Just making more work for Wilson.
You can discover that spell. You can create that spell in your version of Obejima. That could be one of the things you're doing. So then you could reintroduce spells from the list that aren't there. And again, that curated list is a suggestion. It would be a recommendation. but yeah.
That's actually so interesting. The only spells in Obejima are the ones that are written in the book. And every time a new spell gets introduced, your character is the first person to cast it.
Oh, that's cool.
That's actually wild.
That's funny.
That's really interesting.
I mean, it would be fun if Fireball really is used in cooking. That's pretty much what Fireball is used for in this world.
There's one giant cast iron wok in the middle of town.
Yeah. Or they've figured out a way to cast it where it just like fireworks. It's all like fireworks, you know, just like, you know, it's like, you know, the idea of like gunpowder, you know, for the longest time was used just for fun and like fireworks. And then somebody's like, hey, you put that in a can, you can blow somebody's head off. And you're like, that's great. It's like,
So we talked about technology, we talked about magic, we talked about spirits, but there's something that you touched on earlier that I want to jump back to, which is the ruling people, like and the culture and the farming. And then something I mentioned earlier, which is I don't imagine Obejima is very big, which is what is the ruling class like? Is there a ruling class? Is there individual leaders of each village? How you know, there's factions and organizations, but we don't have like a governing body of any case. And like, I guess technically, I guess that's how governing bodies kind of form, is maybe if we were to see this if we were to see like a faction like the Courier Brigade continue to grow over the course of like the next 500 years, they might turn into the ruling government.
Right. You can imagine if the corruption became a more pressing issue in terms of like it started spreading aggressively. Mm-hmm. You could imagine where somebody would take, you know, could take control or take, you know, as a leader, not like as a necessarily desperate, a tyrant,
yeah,
but like,
yeah, like all seven witch factions, right, collect, mm-hmm, and unify. And now like they stop the corruption because of that. They're now like the governing body.
Right. They have, you know, a bigocracy, you know, it's all, yeah, run by spellcasters and stuff. So I can imagine something like that. And if you want to take your game in that direction, great.
Yeah.
But I think the way I imagine Obijima, organizing itself is that I think we, you know, Nakodama used to have a monarchy,
mm-hmm,
but in the years since then, it has kind of, I think it has given way, I think mostly like you mentioned, to kind of like regional and like local leaders, whether, and I imagine each village or each settlement or each even maybe a region might have its own way of doing things.
Yeah.
Where it might be a town elder, it might be an elected, you know, trio of whatevers, mm-hmm, you know, depending on what the settlement is about. And I think that that's what could give each place kind of a unique feel is who not just makes those kind of decisions, but then also how those decisions are upheld. Mm-hmm. Like, are there town guards? Or, you know, does each group have its own, you know, enforcers is probably a little harsh, but, you know, how do each of these places kind of enforce the law?
Well,
you
know, go ahead. No, just like, do villages have walls, or are all villages just open? Like, you just walk into town. Like,
yeah.
I don't think even there's going to be any kind of fortifications or walls here. I
mean, there might be the further east you get on the island, because you start to see things like, you know, there are howlers, or even on the coast you have, you know, our fish people,
the fish folk,
fish folk raiders and stuff like, yeah, that. So.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of the dangers aren't necessarily political dangers or political, you know, from political aggression or anything like that.
It's environmental.
It's environmental. Mm. It's monsters.
Yeah.
It might be, you might have a group of brigands, like a, you know, bandits or what, you know, mm-hmm, whatnot, but it's not like this is, you know, Prince so-and-so's, you know, knights coming in to, yeah, take over all of the Gift of Shiratashi or anything like that.
I just went and watched Castle in the Sky, which we just talked about, in a long time. I hadn't seen it in a long time. And I think there's the moment in which the pirates show up to take the two children, and the entire town steps up and is like, you can't do it. And then they get into like a fist fight. Yeah. I think that's a perfect example of, yeah, like how a town would deal with a conflict. Like, there isn't a guard, but like, you know, the people that are rough and tough and ready to fight, you know, like, you know, Mama and her three you know, sisters all come out, and she's the baker, and all of a sudden, you know, there's a howler here, and she's like, all right, grab your rolling pins, we're taking, yep, care of this howler.
Yep. Yeah. I imagine, like, you know, in Obijima, like, there's probably villages that have, you know, elders. There's probably villages that maybe have a spirit medium shaman, mm-hmm, type, mm-hmm, that, you know, is connected to, you know, communing with spirits. There's probably gangs. There's probably like groups of Obijimas that have gotten together and just been like, hey, we're going to form a gang, and we're going to
gang, and not like a dangerous sense, not but more a, like, yeah, a, like just a collection of people.
Yeah. And then there's like, you know, families. There's probably like, you know, these families have been here a long time, and they've kind of got the family name. And, mm-hmm, so the village is kind of associated with the family.
Yeah.
It also points to the role of an adventuring party, right? Yeah. Like, if there aren't these kind of formal, you know, organizations, and people need protecting, well, do I have a game for you? You know,
mm-hmm, yeah,
you know, roll up a character, you, yeah, know, your, yeah, town needs you. I think, and that's what's great. You know, one of the, you know, working on D&D, that was one of the lessons I learned. I think, I asked, like, what makes a good D&D world? And the answer was, there needs to be a reason for adventurers.
Mm.
Like, that's the most important thing, because this is what you're doing at the table. So I love the idea of, you know, Obijima having dangers that are not necessarily, like, you know, warring empires and this and that, but there are, you know, there's the wilderness of Obijima, there are monsters out there, and there might be, you know, brigands or, you know, jerks, but
monsters.
They need to be dealt with. They need, mm-hmm, to be dealt with, and people need to be protected, and that's what you, adventurer, get to do.
Yeah. Yeah, 100% agree.
Yeah, so there's like this level where like the war tech is capped at. Like there's no siege engines here. There's no like arbalists or things like that. But there might be walls for like in the same way like the Maasai keep out lions. Mm-hmm. You know, they build these thorn fences to encapsulate their herds. That would be sort of what Obojimans are doing, like to keep out howlers or to keep out monsters.
I almost kind of, you know, I don't even see a town like Okiri Village selling weapons. What would they need a weapon for? Like they might sell like, you know, I could see an adventure being like, I'm looking for a sword. And like, well, there's a blacksmith, but he only makes kitchen knives.
Yeah.
You know, or like,
did you try the sword school up the road?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're like, oh, there is an axe, but it's like a felling axe or, you know, like. It's not, you know, it has a wide wedge for splitting wood. It's not a great weapon to take into battle.
It'd probably be very specialized to find those people that are like, well, you know, we know there's monsters around here. We know that these things have to be dealt with.
It also kind of makes weapons a little more special, too, in the sense that it's like, to start adventuring, you had to have your sword commissioned. Mm-hmm. Like you went to a blacksmith and said, I need a sword. And he's like, oh yeah, I haven't made a sword in years. Let me see if I can figure
this out. It might be an heirloom weapon. Yeah. Right? Like this has been in my family for generations. Mm-hmm. Cool. Now there's a story. Mm-hmm. Cause when you lose that sword,
it's that important. Weapon,
it's broken.
Yeah. Or you might be less inclined. Like when you have that special sword, sorry, I'm going to go on a tangent here.
No, I know where you're going with this. I know exactly.
All right. Here's one of my rants.
You just tell the entire story of King Arthur.
Yeah. Here you go.
I'm so interested.
I love getting attached to my stuff in D&D.
Okay.
And one of the things that D&D incentivizes is you giving up your stuff because it's not good enough anymore.
Mm.
And so when I think about like... you know, you think about iconic characters from you know, movies or anything, and usually it's like their gear is part of who they are.
Yeah.
And in D&D, when you're like, oh, it's how I imagine my character, and they have this really cool sword that was their heirloom blade and it passed down for generations, it's not magical, it's just important.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, cool, I just found a +1 sword. You know what you're doing with the heirloom blade? Yep. It doesn't matter anymore. And that makes me sad.
Like even if your blade snapped in two and you just have the hilt and like the guard or something like that, going and having it reforged.
Yeah. Well, it's Narsil, right? In Lord of the Rings. Like it's symbolic. It is like it's something worth reforging.
Yeah.
It means something. So yeah, it's gotta mean something in this world.
So with that, and if Obojima imbues magic into things that have meaning and importance. What if like a part of like keeping this thing alive is what it like?
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't take the +2 sword, but when I snapped my sword and had it reforged, Obojima like rewards that with like, here, imbued with magic, your faith, your passion for this blade.
I love that on a lot of levels. And one of it is the disposable society. It's like getting rid of that. It's like repurposing things and reusing them. And there's a Japanese word for taking something that's broken and forging it with gold, you know, like taking it. It's not because it's broken doesn't mean it's useless. It's like, no, it just takes care to bring it back and you can actually restore it with more love and more, you know, like the whole thing about like a broken bone that resets is actually stronger than when it was, you know, first, you know, just like a regular old bone. And there's something cool about that. There's something neat about rewarding and the adventure to reforge something and the adventure to reuse something instead of just like, chuck it, get another one, get a new plastic sword.
And it's not to diminish the idea of like finding a cool magic weapon is one of the delights of D&D.
Yeah.
Like opening it, you know, you're getting that. But I don't like that I think it could be richer. If there are ways for you who get attached to your stuff and your vision of your character can kind of grow with you, right? You level up with your stuff. Your stuff levels up with you. And I think that's just cool. A cool experience. I have no idea what this has to do with any of the rules of Obojima, But like what you were saying, maybe there is this kind of concept. There could be something.
Well, it also, to tie it all back into the culture, is like reusing vending machines. Like they're not, people are seeing this technology and they're not just going, well, that's interesting, let's melt it down. Mm-hmm. They're going, how do we repurpose this? How do we utilize this thing? And maybe that part of the culture is like deeming importance to the things that you, that are yours. That's really cool to me.
Yeah. Maybe that, that there's this idea like, or this, this thing on Obojima where there are certain things that don't decay. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's certain metal that doesn't decay. Or there's a sword that never rusts, or there's, you know, something that, I don't know, like this idea that, that, that Obojima makes certain things magical.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever those things are there, you can find them all over the island. They might be a vending machine. They might be a sword. That might be, I mean, you might go into a cave and in the corner you find this sword that's just pristine and it's been there for 10,000 years or something mm-hmm, like yeah. that. And it's just like, you know, and then you get it and then who knows? It might lead you on an adventure. It might lead you on a quest. It might connect you to the spirit world. Like, yeah. who knows what I'll do?
I think that ties to an important thing that we might have not directly said, maybe kind of danced around the topic, but it's that Obojima... There doesn't need to be a little special thing that you do, that you cast a spell to give magic to something. Obojima has an abundance of magic, and it's waiting for a meaningful moment to give something magic.
That's cool.
Yep. So it's like oh, why is it that your sword is a plus one now? It's because it was poetic. It's because Obojima saw it, that it deserved that moment for you. It's a reward for your appreciation, because that sword was metal taken from the island and they forged it and you could have thrown it away. Instead you kept it and now you're keeping a part of Obojima with you, and the island rewards you because of that.
I love that. I think that's really cool. Like it's like the things that you wear, the things that you care about as a player, you know, like every now and then you role play. Like I think one of the things that Obojima is all about is role playing. And so if you have a bard and you really kind of go into role playing your flute and you're like, hey, I carved it out of this tree and, you know, I put these markings on it and here's the story about it. And every night you play and you do a fun job of it. And the DM after a couple sessions might be like, okay, now your flute does this cool new thing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, oh, like it leveled up. And I think it's to Ari's point of like your gear levels up with you. There's something really fun about that.
Tying it to those epic moments like we were doing with the Hero's Boon system. Mm-hmm. Imagine a giant, you know, water elementals attacking a town for some reason. It's driven crazy by the corruption. And your sword is this, you plunge the sword into the water elemental just before it dies. And as you pull your sword out, it's like glowing white. And now it's a plus one blade. Mm-hmm. Rather than being like, oh, you killed the water elemental and inside of it was a plus one blade. No, your act is what granted you this thing.
Because now there's a story about the sword, right? Like now people are watching, like whoever witnessed that happened, oh, they saw you pull out the sword. That's now this sword probably got a name because of that, right? Like that's super cool. Before it was your sword and now it is a legendary sword. Yeah. There's only one of these things.
Yeah.
Because you know you're known by the things you by your deeds, and I just think that's awesome.
Yeah,
and because I of really how small that. Obojima is, those stories of the things you do will travel the island. Mm-hmm. You know, like I just think that's awesome.
It makes me think of tying back to what you were saying earlier, Jeremiah, about like you go up to the mountaintop and you talk to the wind spirit and you learn something from the wind, or you. There's a symbiosis. I forget how you put it, but it was like, it wasn't like the wind spirit is the master and you're the disciple. It's more that you're getting something out that's already it's unlocking something within you that's already there. This could be a thing where you're battling something and, you know, in defeating like a water spirit, maybe there's some kind of exchange that happens.
Yeah.
And in battling a water spirit and overcoming it, you learn something about that. Like you learn something about the way of water. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like there might be some cool exchange there where in effect, the water spirit is kind of like challenging you to unlock this thing within yourself. And you're not really defeating a monster. You're actually unlocking your own sort of, I don't know, heroism or powers or whatever it is, or your own kung fu.
It's cool.
Yeah, it's something really neat cool. There. There's something neat there.
Now, I do want to touch on this. We're not, because we have magic items in the book, so we're not saying, like, you know, every character should not find a magic item. That's not what we're saying here. There's a lot of really incredibly interesting moments and stories in which a magic item is found.
Yep.
Read the Lord Super of the Rings. Cool. Yeah. It's full of it. It is still possible, and there are still incredibly interesting moments for you to find magic items and add them to your party and your collection.
Yeah.
But there is also something really unique and interesting about rewarding with a magic item effect, like rather than granting a magic item, embodying, taking a magic item effect and giving it to somebody in as a reward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a cool dungeon master trick. You know, it's like, yeah, you know, I can have a room, and inside the room there's, you know, a treasure chest with a +1 sword. Okay, cool. Or you could say, all right, instead of putting the +1 sword in the chest, I'm going to take the +1 sword and then have it like that water elemental scene where you defeat the monster, and when you pull out, your sword's a +1.
I mean, even if you wanted to basically just have that moment of like, I just want to open a thing and find a cool magic item. Like, imagine if you had, like, instead of a sword, there's a magical scabbard, and you put your sword in there. It's a mundane sword, and when you draw it out, it fundamentally changes it, right? But now you got your +1 sword, you got, or whatever it was, but it was your sword. So when you started with, and like, one of my favorite things is looking at characters, like a level 10 character, and then doing the retrospective and seeing where they came from, right? I love seeing grizzled, like, okay, my favorite level 10 characters or higher epic, like, is not so much like we are gods kind of characters and they're all like perfect and the best at whatever. I like seeing characters. This is not necessarily Obajima specific, but this is just a personal thing for me. I love seeing characters that have scars and all sorts of like evidence for all the crap they had to get through to get to, like, you're survivors, more like, more than just being a hero is not just you're heroic and you have all the power that you can possibly wield. It's like, it took a lot to get here, and like, but you might still have like your, what looks like your dinky sword or whatever, but it has become powerful with you. And I just think that's that, now that tells a story. You look at a high level character, and you could, you know, if you show their whole loadout, and you can kind of annotate where they got all their stuff, and it kind of is a, it's a document of their whole journey, and I love that. And you know, whether they found the cool sword because they found, you know, or they found the axe of the you know, the skeleton king or whatever, and they ripped it out of his hands, or it is their, you know, heirloom blade. Like, both of those things tell awesome stories.
Yeah,
and it just, you know, just moving, being able to you know, that former example already exists in D&D, but having D&D kind of embrace the idea of your stuff leveling with you. You're not just replacing it, I think is...
Yeah.
It's cool.
It's like having the shield with like giant claw marks on it, you know?
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like, that was the battle when we fought the dragon, man.
That's right.
You know, like, it almost took me out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to jump away because we went on a tangent here.
We sure did.
We went on a tangent.
I could keep tangenting.
It's a cool tangent, but I want to jump onto a few topics. So the two that I really want to talk about, well, there's a lot of topics. Okay. This one might go a little long, but I want to talk about these. We don't have to speed run them, but I want to bring them up. So I'll do some of the more important ones first, which is thoughts on death in Obajima. This is, I think, super important for us to discuss.
You mean like culturally, how do Obajimans see death, or what happens when you die, like
in the game,
for realsies in the game?
For realsies. You know, yeah, pro or against death. What are your thoughts? You like death? what I'm wanting to discuss are, what is the culture built, what culture is built up around death? Because every culture has some sort of belief, and sometimes it's tied to religion, sometimes it's not, about what happens when your character passes. And so there are already things, and I'm going to bring this up because the Rubble Golem already exists, and that is that is a thing that happens to a character after they die. And that specifically is a rubble golem is the embodiment of a character who has passed, and they have imbued like their spirit, their, which, you know, what is spirit? Spirit mm-hmm. is probably not the right word there, but their life essence has brought this golem creature to life. And now it's like they sit and guard their, you know, the place where a collapsed building was that took them out, you know? So that is a way that, you know, that's a thing that happens when you move on. They're not undead. We haven't classified them as undead. They're a creature. But, you know, that doesn't happen all the time. That happens in very niche scenarios. So what happens, or not what happens, but what Obojimin's thing happen when someone dies?
So I guess there's a few things to unpack on that one. I mean, probably there's a lot of things, but, you know, there's a question about even like just using rubble golems as the example of how aware are Obojimins that rubble golems exist and that rubble golems are or used to be, you know, they're created with the life force of somebody who used to be alive, right?
Right.
So there's that just on that specific example. The concept of a soul is interesting. Because right now we have spirits, and that, you know, outside of, you know, the book Obojima, spirit is often used as well for like describing a ghost, right?
Right.
Which is usually the soul of somebody who's, or it is an entity, a soul who's not passed on to where they're supposed to go in
right.
the afterlife or whatever, right? So we can have both if we wanted to, just like spirits are one thing, and let's say like ghosts are another. Right. So you could still have that. I think it kind of muddies things a little bit. But the idea of that, okay, so then what's supposed to happen when you die? If this rubble golem is an outlier or something has gone haywire.
Right.
What is supposed to happen? You can treat rubble golems, the life essence that animates a rubble golem might not necessarily be a soul. There might be some sort of animating force in all human or in all living things. That when that goes away, it marked this rubble with that, right? Mm-hmm. And then it created this rubble golem. But what do Obojimins think happens? Yeah, I don't know. Like,
could be that like rubble golem could be like a story come to life, like the memory. Like maybe memories, you know, when a person dies, their memories kind of infused into the walls of this thing, and the memories kept alive by this golem. I'm thinking of like ancient Egyptians had like, I think, five different spirits, mm-hmm. you know, like you had the Ka and the Ba and the Kaibit and the Ren. So like the Ren was your name, like your name actually had your spirit in it, a part of your spirit. And the Ba was like the bird that usually, that's like the human headed bird, and that bird would fly. And that was another part of your spirit. Mm. And then there was the Kaibit, which was like your shadow spirit. Like that would go into the underworld. And so, but that's what, like when you'd see the names chiseled off of the walls, it was actually destroying a part of your spirit. So maybe Obojimins, it could be that the spirit has multiple fractures, parts. Part of that, part of your spirit could be your story, your memory. And, or part of your spirit could be your emotion. Like, the feelings you felt in that house, you know, that got destroyed. So when you die, you know, part of your spirit goes, you know, into the spirit realm or doesn't. Maybe it's a completely different experience, but then maybe part of your memories or your emotions go into the space around you.
Well, what if you had a situation, I'm not in love with this, by the way, but it might spark something.
Okay.
What if when you die, you do have some aspect of yourself that, you know, it might splinter, or it might be some aspect of yourself that actually does pass into the spirit realm. I want to avoid this feeling like a soul, but what it's supposed to do is not stay there. It's supposed to go through the spirit realm into something
else.
The beyond. Mm-hmm. And that might be all that they need to know, right? It goes to the beyond. But it could be something interesting that something might happen where what I'm imagining is like you might have this like great spirit spider web at the, you know, that's between the spirit realm and the beyond. And most of the time, spirits slip through. Mm. But if something happened in life, or you know, some, I don't know, maybe you got cursed, you actually get stuck to that web, and then you now are, you become part of the spirit realm. So imagine something like the spider kind of, you know, spins a web around whatever that entity is, and then it might be reborn as an actual spirit, something like that. I don't know if I want to literalize the, or be too explanatory with the connection between spirits and people and all that kind of stuff. It starts to feel a little like it's dispelling the magic. But
I think also,
maybe, but if that's what they believe, that's not necessarily what it is.
Right.
So
go ahead, Adam. I know you had something.
Oh, it's just like there could be another part of it. And, you know, then we can all like sort of shuffle all these pieces on the table. But another thing could be, it could be that, you know, Obajimans, when somebody dies, they're kind of connected to the elements. So, you know, an Obajiman village that's by a lake, they're kind of connected to a water spirit or an elder spirit. And so then they would bury their dead in the lake. They would just kind of submerge them in the water and they'd give them back to the nature spirit of the lake. And then the Obajimans that are in an earth section, whether it's a mountain or hilly region or whatever, they would bury their dead. And Obajimans that are in the land of hot water, that's like fiery and bubbling. And so they might, you know, do cremations or, and then there might be another Obajiman that are up in the high mountains or on a plateau and they do sky burials and they just kind of offer them up to the sky. So that could be, there could be an elemental aspect to it where your spirit becomes one with the elements, goes back to Obajima essentially.
When you say spirit, it's more in the soul sense of spirit.
Yes, not in the in the spirit realm sense of it. Yeah.
So I think there's, I think we can do that without tying it to their geological, or geographic, not geological, geographic
location. And geological, yeah.
And geological location. But maybe there's like, soul, like there's like who you are as a person determines how Obajimans lay you to rest. So it's like, like there's maybe the four aspects, which is like wind and earth and sea and fire. And they kind of associate that with like, if you're incredibly jovial and like you're always a joyous person, they might be like, oh, you were, you know, you are one with the water, and that's how they bury you. Or if it's like you were a fiery, like passionate person,
it might be worth. I know that it's beyond the elements are kind of beyond, you know, Avatar, but I would probably steer away from elements just because of Avatar: Last Airbender and associations that way. I know it's not really generating power or anything like that. It's not like you're not casting things. Maybe I'm wrong or overly sensitive about it.
Yeah, I think it's just like culturally, I mean, you could say specific things if you wanted to, like for example, you could do like burial in a bed of clay. Like there's like, you know, you like they coat you in clay and then bury you. Like you can add more to it and not be as like earth, fire, wind, water. Yeah. You know, like it could be sky and soil and you know, like sun and
All sorts of it doesn't have to be four, right? Like you can come up with a bunch of traditions surrounded by that.
And I guess the main thing is that it's like this idea that, you know, you're going back to Obajima. You came out of Obajima, you're going back to Obajima. So like your soul is Obajima's soul. It's really, we're not like it. I don't know. Maybe culturally it's expressed as we're all sort of these weird expressions of Obajima, you know, like,
I mean, another thing we could say is like, I think we're all kind of on agreement that maybe there's no afterlife. I don't think they think that there's like a secondary time in which your body gets to. Yeah. And I think maybe the times in which you don't leave, like, you know, the times in which rubble golems stay are the times that, like there's something wrong. Like you should have been gone by now, but you're still here. And which is why it's like almost like unnatural.
That's what made me think about like emotions. It's like something that you're holding on to, you know, like if, you die in a circumstance where you're holding on to something or things are unfinished. I mean, not that any life is finished, you know, like you're like, okay, now it's all wrapped up in a nice tidy bow and we're done, you know, now I'm gone.
What if it's not the person? What if it's someone else holding on to the memory of them?
Ooh.
So it's not tied to like, I have unfinished business here. It's like, for example, I just did this when we were playtesting the Robogolem. One of the characters who's an elf decided to go into ethereal sight. And this is not how I think we're going to make it work. But in the moment, as I'm like DMing off from the seat of my pants, I was like, you see a young girl. Like you see the form of a young girl where the rubble golem stands, like when you switch into ethereal sight. And he was like, oh man, we are not just fighting this mindless thing right now. And afterwards he came up to me and he was like, I know that we were just testing combat abilities, but he's like, I would have loved to have figured out a different way of defeating them. Like, could I have gone to, and I was like, oh yeah. And we talked about it a little bit and we ended up ending on this story that was like, you know, what if an old man was walking through a field where like his village was destroyed and he saw a rubble golem and he's like, I don't know why, but when I stare at that rubble golem, I see my daughter. Mm. And I have my dog who is my daughter's dog. And the moment the dog saw the rubble golem, it ran after it. And I had to tackle the dog and bring it home. And he's like, I don't know what's going on. And then like the story ended up developing and we were going back and forth. Like the conclusion was that he was, you know, like holding on to her. Like I didn't tie it together until this moment, but maybe rather than her being trapped here because of unfinished business for her, him not letting go of his daughter is what kept the rubble golem in existence. That's why his daughter's like memory is trapped within the rubble golem.
That's cool. And it's an adventure, you know, like instantly within a monster, you've got an adventure. And you also have a non-combat way of solving it, which I think is really great.
But all of that back into another thing that I was trying to bring up, which is, you know, if magic is this thing that the island imbues and the island kind of is imbuing this memory with life, then maybe it's just like that's a belief of Obajimans. It's like you become magic. Like when you're gone, you're magic now. You feel the things I do to, you know, make my grain grow and you imbue life into our flying machines. You just become part of the arcane.
Yeah. You become like you're repurposed, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, yeah. Like if I'm an Obajiman and I think like somebody dies, you know, I'm like, they now go into, the mystery, you know, the mystery of Obajima and what it does. And then I can invent whatever I want to, you know, like, oh, my crops grew really great next year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it also plays into another topic, I think, about what Obajimans think about the world beyond Obajima.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there's this whole culture that's developed around kind of self-sufficiency of the island, this whole sense of being repurposed kind of makes a lot of sense, that you're not going anywhere. Like, where are you going to go?
Mm-hmm.
There is the island.
It is the island. You know,
like that is their world. So like there's something really interesting about that. It would almost seem absurd that you would go somewhere else. Because even the spirit realm, which is layered on top of Obajima, is still Obajima.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So like what do you mean you're gonna go somewhere else when you die?
Yeah, this is Obajima.
Where? Yeah. There's no other place.
Yeah, that really speaks to the character of Obajimans and what their worldview.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
it's cool. That's cool.
Yeah. Beyond the island is churning, twisting waters.
You know,
this is the place to be. This is. This is.
Why would you want to go anywhere else?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, everything's here. There's a difference. I mean, it's interesting like that Obajimans are, because it was Nakadama, then humans, but they're not humans as we know them because they're humans, but they've also got elves somewhere in them because every now and then a human gives birth to an elf.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a hybrid race.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, in the sense that like elves aren't like a people in the same way that like Nakadama you know, two Nakodama parents get together and have a Nakodama child. Like, elves are kind of like a phenomenon.
Yeah.
Yeah, two elves would get together and have a child, and that child would be human.
Yeah, yeah.
Most likely. I mean, I guess it could be another elf. It could be, but
I mean, you decide, but I mean, that's the idea. It's not necessarily like the elf DNA or whatever.
But the idea...
An interesting character.
Is like, humans, you know, we as humans as we know it are like, what is beyond the horizon? I will make a boat and I will go sail because I'm bored with this island. These humans might not think like that.
No.
They might just be like, this is, we're satisfied.
Or those content. Those that do left.
Yes. Yeah. And they were never seen again.
Haven't returned.
They were never seen again.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, you probably have a story of somebody knows somebody who knows somebody who got in a boat and sailed for the horizon. And that was 3 years ago. And that was that, you know?
Yeah. Jed and Bill built a boat. They were always kind of strange kids, but you know. They never quite satisfied, but there they went. Never saw them since.
So I think, and this is where I want to end on this, is just our last kind of discussion on the world beyond. And I think that's kind of what we're coming to the conclusion of here, is that beyond Obajima is like, there's nothing for them. It's just turning waters.
And so that would, to a lot of people on Obajima, if I'm kind of a pragmatic, you know, farmer or something like that, I could totally imagine that as a response, right? Mm-hmm. Just like, yeah, what do you mean there's beyond? I look out and day after day, there's nothing. So what are you talking about? But I also can imagine, like, just because people imagine things, the outlandish myths and legends that would emerge about what, you know, if you just go far enough, because people do try.
Yeah.
It's like, if you go far enough, you know, there might be a whole other, you know, maybe it's another island. Maybe it's, you know, whatever. Like, their concept of what a landmass is would also be really kind of skewed. But, you know, maybe there's a cluster of ships out there or whatever. Maybe
there's a wall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or maybe they're like, there's nothing on the water. We need to look to the skies.
Mm-hmm.
It's in there. Or maybe other people are like, no. It's underneath the water that we need to explore.
You go down deep enough.
If you go down deep, there's a city.
Yeah. There's a great fish. And in his belly, there's a city.
Yeah. And so that's what's really fun. So that's the thing that you get to play with as a DM in this world also, is creating the myths of what's beyond.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to be in the book.
Yeah. And the Obajimas might think of death as, you know, the beyond the horizon. They might call it, when you die, you go beyond the horizon, you know, like, because at night, if you go beyond the horizon, you just go out into nothingness. I mean, you know, like, you just go out into the never ending water. That could be another metaphor they use for death. Like, he's gone to the never ending water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or there he goes.
Not coming back.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. All right. Well, we've recorded a lot on this. We've recorded a lot on this episode. And so I am going to cut us short. I know there's more stuff we could be talking about, but instead, we will finish that out and you'll find it in the book. For right now, I think this was Adam. This is Ari, myself, Jeremiah, signing out on this podcast episode, because we got more to shoot.
More's coming.
More's coming. So thank you so much for joining us. You can follow us on Instagram, TikTok, or YouTube. Not sure if this will be available on Spotify just yet, because we are trying our hardest. If it is, you can go down below in the link and find it. I'm sure it's there. You can catch us on YouTube Music and hopefully Apple Music and Amazon very, very soon. Thank you so much for joining us. We will catch you next time. See ya.
See ya.